Bonjour!
Comme ça, I'm Ting Clareval.
And I'm Dr. Catherine Wu, and you're listening to the Cultural Quotient Podcast.
In Season 1, we introduce the world to cultural intelligence, where it comes from and how it can help you with your cross-cultural relationships.
Now we are back for Season 2, where we share more stories and show you how CQ shows up in real life.
If you like what you hear, give us 5 stars or leave us a comment, question or feedback. We'll be happy to hear from you.
And now, enjoy the show. So Ting, we're back.
Welcome back.
I heard you have been traveling a lot.
Yes, yes.
That's wonderful. So we're going to be talking about that today. But before that, we want to do a summary of what happened in season one.
First of all, we want to thank everybody who has been listening to our podcast and giving us like a lot of really great feedback.
Yes, and we are super grateful to all the encouragements and messages that we have received.
Absolutely. I really love how people are engaging with our content.
Yeah.
And it reinforces that belief we had that people are actually interested in this topic. So that's really gratifying. So thanks so much. Now, what has happened in season one, right? First, we defined cultural intelligence,
which is the skills that people good at adapting to other cultures have. We spoke about why it's different from emotional intelligence.
Yep.
And then we introduced the 4 dimensions of cultural intelligence. We started with the drive,
yeah,
the motivation, right? Knowledge, understanding, general characteristics to compare and contrast cultures. The 3rd dimension, the strategy, the mental processes. And then the last dimension was about the action. What do you do when you recognize that you and I have different ways of doing things? And how do you adopt new strategies, new behaviors, new form of communication that are not necessarily natural to you. So these are the 4 dimensions of cultural intelligence.
Yeah. So what are we going to do in season 2, especially now here in our first episode?
Yes. Season 2, bringing cultural intelligence and exploring it in context where people are actually crossing cultures. So today, back to your travel. I heard you went to Europe.
Yeah.
And that it was your first time?
It was,
okay.
Yeah.
Shall we talk about that?
Absolutely, absolutely. So one of the things that contributes to cultural intelligence, obviously, is traveling, because that is your opportunity to be exposed, right, to other cultures. And that's where actually all the learning and connection happens, if you are willing to step out of that comfort zone. And definitely going to Europe for the first time in my life. I went there late last year, in 2022.
Okay.
It was for a work trip.
Okay.
And yeah, even just stepping on the plane straight away, I was like, I think I'm the only one with black hair here, you know?
Really?
I immediately noticed that. Yeah. And in season one, I remember mentioning to you about that sometimes I do get intimidated when I travel to certain cultures because of just maybe some inherent insecurities. And that's probably one of the things that I found myself reflecting on because of us, because of you, because of our podcast, I now have more awareness and can therefore start asking myself, is this culture or is this just me being insecure? You know what I mean? So on the plane already straight away, just getting help, putting my baggage in the overhead bin, and the airline.
Yeah.
Let's just say a certain German airline. No need to mention the brand. I'll just leave it at that. But yeah, I was just so surprised the attendants were not as helpful as I thought. So I like booking the last row or close to the back of the plane. I'm normally the first to board. And now the overhead bins, I think the last ones normally are reserved for crew.
That's right.
Right? So then I was trying to get my bag up, and then of course it's full. And then the attendant was like, yeah, you can't put your bag there. And then that was it. All right, then tell me where can I put it? Because it's full. Like, I know I can't put it there. But she just goes, yeah, you can't put it there. And I'm like, yeah, that's not helpful. I'm used to maybe Singapore Airlines and Philippine Airlines, where they will actually help you and like, you can put it here or on the next row or maybe a row further down. This one, she just says, yeah, you can't put it there. Okay, so then what? Then of course, I'm looking around. And then this older gentleman behind me, he just says, give me your bag. And then he puts it 3 rows ahead. And because I was holding up the line, right, of people boarding. And I was so obviously profusely embarrassed and also grateful. And he was like, no problem, no problem, you know, because German guy, like, no problem, no problem. I could tell they were like, it's not a big deal. But yeah, those are the kinds of frustrations that I found myself questioning why and what is the cause of this. It's just, is this on me? Is this on them? Is this culture? Should I just be like, you know?
Yeah. There is a national culture where the communication is more direct.
Sure.
In our experience in Asia, people may not say to you, no, you can't.
Yes,
no,
that's
in,
right.
In those exact
we
words.
Talked about that last time, remember?
Yeah.
When we were asking my producer, how do we do this?
Yes.
Instead of saying you can't, he was like, yeah, that'll be tough.
Yes, right? Yeah. So yes. that's the yes. cultural element, yeah. is how you phrase the impossibility. Of, and then they ask, what do you do next, right? I think this is beyond the national culture.
No, I agree.
It's more about the customer service training.
And I agree. This, and the proof of that was that gentleman behind me,
yeah.
obviously,
yeah.
was super yeah. helpful. Give it to me. Boom. Done. You know, yeah. no problem, move on.
Yeah.
Thank you. So right from the airline, I already experienced a lot of these cultural observations, maybe, or at least some awareness of how I stack up culturally against that part of the world. But yeah, Switzerland is a beautiful country. I see now why a lot of people make it one of their top destinations in Europe. It's,
okay.
it's really picturesque. And people were nice. As I mentioned, I went for work. So I don't know if this is just because I was in a corporate bubble. My first day, I arrived on a Sunday, and then I spent the afternoon walking around, just taking okay. photos. I was lucky. It was a beautiful autumn afternoon, you know,
okay.
blue sky. It was cold, but it was blue sky. The sun was out. So it was really lovely, lovely day for a walk. And then the next day, I had to go to work.
Okay.
And I remember everywhere, people are just like, good morning, like, greeting you,
ah.
very warm, whether they know you or not, everybody greets everybody.
Yes.
Then, of course, when in Rome, like that they say, right? So then yeah. I'm like, hi, good morning. I had to get over my shyness also.
Oh.
Because that's not done in Asia, you know?
It's
even in Singapore, where it's more multicultural, and you obviously have a lot more Westerners than in other parts of Asia. It's not yet the norm. But
yes.
there, I remember, you know... people greet each other. Morning,
yes.
good afternoon,
that's
whatever.
Right.
Hello,
yeah.
how are you today? Small talk. I'm like, I don't know you.
it's very interesting. My Singaporean students, when they go to Europe, that's one thing that they didn't note. It's like, oh, everybody say hello and goodbye when they get on the bus and
yes.
get off the bus.
Yes, and the lift.
Yes,
oh,
you enter
yeah.
a store,
yeah.
when you leave
yeah.
a store. And they find this so surprising
yes.
because it's not done like this in Singapore, in China.
No, not even in the Philippines.
Yeah.
And in Switzerland, I don't know if it's also because this is like a global company, right, with thousands of employees. I don't believe they all know each other. But it's just amazing. Like, they go even beyond hello. So for example, oh, yeah, the weather today. Oh, it's nice. Like, they'll make small talk. They don't just stop at hello. And I remember I asked my colleague, do you know that person? No, you know, that's just how you do it, I guess, in that corporate space. So so that was amazing. But yes, absolutely, on public transport, people greet each other in the shops.
Mm.
And so that was really fascinating experience.
Yeah. You say I had to learn to overcome my shyness.
Yeah, I know.
What do you mean by that?
So I think I mentioned before, I didn't realize that perhaps I do feel intimidated whenever
uh-huh.
I travel,
okay.
especially to Western countries.
Okay.
And maybe it's also some cultural insecurity around being Asian,
okay.
Going to Western, richer, more
mm-hmm.
developed, industrialized country. Not that anybody was making me feel that way, but this is also a surprise for me.
Okay.
And then I also wonder if this is also because of all the news you hear about racist attacks. Like, that's why I'm also suddenly now more sensitive.
Okay.
Maybe these are all unconscious thoughts feeding into me that then I find myself really like, shy.
Okay.
And I feel like if I simply say hello, people will not say hello back because I'm not used to it. I'm not used to it. So whenever you try to do something new, then obviously there's uncertainty, there's
yeah.
like trepidation.
Yeah.
But like I said, that is one of the reasons for traveling. We discussed this, comfort
yes.
zone.
Yes.
So that small act of being a little more proactive
yeah.
when in greeting others, that's me stepping out of my comfort zone.
Yeah. And we talk about cultural intelligence. We say there are these four dimensions. One of them is the action, learning new behaviors.
Yeah.
On paper, learning new behaviors sounds simple.
Oh.
Right? Yeah, I've just learned to greet people when I meet them in the morning. But in reality, it comes with other challenges that go beyond being able to act the behavior. It also sends you back to some kind of internal questioning, a sense of maybe you are not being authentic or you are not doing the right thing.
Yes,
or,
yes, not doing the right thing.
And then you have stranger anxiety, which is all this thought in our head that tells us, oh, what if they don't like me? What if they think I'm strange?
What if
they judge me?
No, but this is one of the earliest questions I asked. Yeah. Is this cultural unfamiliarity or simple self-esteem insecurity issues?
I wouldn't even go into self-esteem, but what I want to say is these are common. Many people have a little bit of discomfort interacting with people they don't know. But when you cross culture, you have additional anxiety that not only we don't know each other, but we also perceive each other as very different.
Yeah.
And because we feel each other very different, we worry even more because we don't know what to expect. And we don't know how to understand, and we don't know the proper way of being around
them. Am I behaving correctly according to the norm of this culture?
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And your point about being different, here's another thing, obviously, that maybe contributed to my intimidations. Everybody's taller than me. So maybe psychologically, that physical difference is also more pronounced. So do you know how I started overcoming the shyness?
Oh, yes.
I wouldn't even maybe agree. I'll just start with smiling.
Okay.
Just smile. So that was like my way in. I'm confident about my smile. I know I have a good smile. So I'll just start with making eye contact and smiling and nodding, not even saying anything at first, you know, just maybe acknowledging like smile, nod, and then gradually work my way up to saying good morning or good afternoon or goodbye or good evening, you know. But those were the baby steps I took.
And that's amazing. That's exactly the solution or the strategy that we advise people. You go from not saying hello to anybody to saying hello to everybody. That's a huge step. You cannot bridge that like right away. So the best way to go about this is, you know, what is slightly outside of your comfort zone, your smile, and then you can slowly build.
Correct.
And it helps you balance doing the behavior that is expected and socially beneficial, because then you can connect with other people around you, but at the same time maintaining an internal state of anxiety that is manageable, so that you don't feel like it's too much and then I'm out of there,
right? Yes. So going back to what we were discussing about the directness, the direct way of communication. So now we go from Switzerland, let's jump to France.
But you went to Paris.
I had no plans to go to Paris because I thought it was too far from Basel, which is where I was based. Everybody was like, go to Paris. So, you know, I'm so grateful that my colleagues encouraged me to go to Paris. So I ended up in Paris, and obviously my number one stop was all of the iconic like Louvre, Eiffel Tower, walking on the Seine, you know. Then, of course, I went for dinner. And because I'm all in for the whole tourist experience. So I went to one of these bistros nearby the Eiffel Tower, got a nice table, and then the waitress serving me a fantastic customer service. I guessed I was from Singapore, and I'm like, you're half correct.
Oh.
I am from Singapore, but I'm not Singaporean, you know. But anyway, so very good customer service. And then when it came time to pay, she said to me, oh, and by the way, that doesn't include the tip. Like very directly saying, you have to tip me. In my, to me, that was like, oh, I'm surprised, because I thought a tip is something that is up to the diner. But the fact that she had mentioned it and said it that way, she's like, you know, you're expected to tip and I'm expecting you to tip me. Is that culture shock? I know we defined culture shock last season.
It's a shock, obviously.
It's a shock, no, but it, yeah. That's a very direct way of asking for money.
Although it could be a lot more direct.
Yeah, for sure. In the Philippines, we tip, right? Tipping is a culture there. And other parts of Asia, Indonesia as well, and Thailand. Singapore, it's not really a practice. But still, I thought that was very direct. And then if I were to go back to another cultural dimension, you talk about individualist and collectivist, right? So if I go back to the airline, this, maybe Asian cultures are more collectivist. I'm also thinking it could be a product of Western cultures typically being more individualist. So self-reliance and like doing things on your own.
Yeah.
This is probably the unconscious default behavior, right? So it's highly possible in that airline that there's a customer service aspect to it, like the corporate training, but if you want to tie it back to my larger culture behind it, they're just like, we're just more individualistic that way. Whereas maybe you fly with Asian Airlines, where maybe part of that Asian collectivist culture is part of the airline culture, then you have more helpful staff.
Yes. One of the key characteristics of collectivist culture is that there is a high expectation that people will do things that benefit the group.
Mm.
And there is also a certain level of peer pressure or social pressure to engage in this kind of behavior. So one thing I have experienced now that my kids are going to school in Singapore is to see that there is a strong push to get kids to be more caring towards each other, to think about others a lot. Give you an example. Last week, the teacher was telling us about the values that they want to impart the kid. And one of them is be thoughtful. Before you talk, think about the impact on other people.
Well, they're already teaching kids this.
Yeah. To me, this is very interesting. It's like to see that how those values, those social rules are actually taught and imparted to children very early and through schools.
Yeah.
I don't remember me growing up having this idea of be thoughtful as an explicit value that the teachers want to convey in the class.
Yeah.
I don't know how it is in the Philippines.
Yeah. Definitely times have changed.
Yes.
I went to a Catholic school. So a lot of the values that I taught from primary school are very heavily tied to religion.
Okay.
Praying to God, it's like honesty, kindness. But
one thing I have observed, at least in my experience with Chinese cultures, the way the parents are raising their children. So it's not just learned through school.
Right? Absolutely.
They are trained growing up in how to relate to one another. And so when we encourage kids to be nice, to be thoughtful, to be caring, we also reinforce value that social connections are important. Oh. This is something that we see is more common in collectivistic cultures. And also there is a norm. And so people will feel more worried to breaking the norm. You know, what if I say something that is not nice? What if I say something that is not caring? People won't like me. So when we talk about individualism and self-reliance, independent, doing things on your own, these are values that at least I have seen in my upbringing were emphasized from very early on, like China and then Singapore. This is less important. What's more important is to be thoughtful and caring and thinking about others.
Yes. Now, thinking about others precisely because of the collectivist nature of the culture. What I'm seeing now, and this was probably true even when I was younger growing up in the Philippines, is you're constantly surrounded by a community. You have an extended family constantly around you, which is, of course, has its benefits, right? That multi-generational connection is kept alive. But everybody growing up with nannies and caregivers. I really wonder, you know, how and when independence and self-reliance can be reinforced in a society where actually children constantly have someone around.
Yeah.
So anyway, back to traveling.
Back to Ting in Europe.
Yeah. I was in Paris. Took the bus in Paris. Okay. Got lost.
Okay, tell us about this.
That's the problem when you don't speak one word of French. So when I travel, I really, as much as possible, try to get the local experience. This was Sunday morning, and I was going to leave in the afternoon, but I said I want to do some more exploring, and I want to go to, Sacred Heart, Sacré-Cœur, that place at Montmartre. As I Google, you know, like, how do I get there? Oh, there's a bus. It's right in front of my hotel. It's going to be a 15-20 minute bus ride. Just one direct bus. Perfect. And of course, when it was my turn to take the bus, that's where the driver decides it's time to go to the garage. Before that, I was having a fantastic time. The bus wasn't so full. I was even videoing myself. Yeah, I'm on the bus in Paris. How surreal is this? So proud of myself. I'm taking the public transport in Paris without speaking French. And then, the bus driver stops and then he starts talking in French. And then maybe two or three people got off. And then one or two people got on, but nobody else moved. And he maybe talked like two or three times. And of course, I didn't say anything. And again, this is the intimidation and security. And I'm like, what do I do? Should I go up and ask him? But then what do I say? I'm not sure what he's saying. Then he goes off and I'm watching on Google Maps and I see that we're moving away from my destination.
Oh.
And so I walk up to the driver and he does not speak English at all. And I was saying, where is the next stop? I'll just get off the next stop. And then there was this Indian lady who was sitting near the front and she was the one who took pity on me and she translated for me in English. And she said, he's saying he can't stop because he needs to go to the garage now and this and that. Oh, how far away is the place. Oh, no, it's only 5 minutes. It wasn't 5 minutes. It was like half an hour.
Oh, no.
So it was fine. I got a €1 tour of Paris.
Okay.
And the outskirts. And I'm like, well, then what else can I do? It's not like I can get off, right?
Yeah.
And I just told myself, look, wherever I get off on this bus, I'll just get an Uber. And I can actually share the video of me. I'm lost in Paris. And now, as much as I would love to take the train or the bus back to Montmartre, I don't have time anymore because I have to catch my train back. But yes, that is definitely one of the disadvantages of not speaking the local language.
Yeah.
I had no idea what was happening.
So how did you feel at that moment where you didn't know where you were heading to?
Yeah,
and
I know, right?
They told you 5 minutes, but it was 30 minutes.
My train was until 3 p.m. So I definitely had time. It's just that I was so annoyed by the detour.
Ah.
But then I tried to see it another way. It's like, it's a free tour of Paris for €1.
Okay.
And I know I could easily book an Uber. It's one of these travel adventures. And then the funny thing is, whenever I talk to my friends, even my French friends and people who live in Paris, I'm like, even I've never taken the bus in Paris. Apparently it can get dodgy.
Okay. So you had a lot of confidence in the face of adversity.
Yeah, so that's the thing, right? I'm so comfortable venturing out into unknown like this. I definitely like exploring on my own.
So your CQ drive is very high.
Oh, absolutely. And I love talking to people. Going back to the plane and coming over to Europe. So people are boarding and I'm on the window. There's a gentleman at the aisle and the seat between us was still empty. And we were both watching. And then by the time they closed the door, we both smiled. We're like, oh, thank God we have space between us, you know? So then we ended up talking as well. And I found that they're from Ukraine.
Okay.
So there was a group of them. And at first they were so noisy. So I was like, oh no, is this going to be a problem? But no, actually it was fine. But yeah, then you get to talk to them. So and I'm like, I'm so sorry about what's happening to your country. Yeah, I'm great at talking to strangers. This is something I love doing.
This is so strange thing. We open by you telling us about your insecurity and shyness just to say hello to people in the office. And here you are talking so excitedly, random people in the plane and in the taxi.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
What's going on here?
Yeah, these are passing encounters. Okay. Actually, that's a good point. They're not really passing encounters. Oh, I suddenly remembered my experience at the chocolate shop. Did I tell you about
that? No, tell us about that.
Oh, after this experience, I immediately wrote on TripAdvisor, you know, like a review of this place.
What happened?
So, you know, I'm in Switzerland. And I have people who are like, hey, please buy me this brand of chocolates, you know? And Switzerland being in Europe, everything closes at 6 p.m. And I get off work at 6 p.m., you know? And I'm like, I'm never there. So anyway, one day I managed to make it before 6 p.m. Go in and I have my basket. I'm spending money because, you know, first time in Europe, first time in this chocolate brand apparently is the best. Everybody's asking me. So then I'm going around and putting things in my basket. And I remember going up to the counter at least 2 or 3 times to one of the sales ladies to ask questions about the product. Mm-hmm. What is this? What's the difference? This and that. And da, da, da. She was irritated that I was asking so many questions. Again, being so sensitive about, is this culture or is this just me reading something more into this because of my innate insecurity, right? Anyway, long story short, I walk up to that counter with that same lady and I said, where do I pay for this? And then instead of asking me, she goes, I'm serving this lady first, this person from me. That's fine. I'm just asking, where do I pay? So again, there's this mismatch of what did I say? This was a counter in the middle of the shop. And then she went out and she moved to another counter. There were more terminals for payment and there were more people there. So then I followed and then I said, is this where I queue up? And then nobody answered me. And then finally, there was this lady. She went to the original counter where I was at. Then I followed her. But then there's this other lady who cuts in front of me because there's a new line opening and she's also waiting. And this sales lady said, no, she was first.
Oh.
And so I got to pay first. And then she starts chatting me up. Like she was the first one who was like being friendly with me. And then in the end, she says, oh, do you want a free sample? I guess she noticed that I had been waiting for so long and that her colleagues were bordering on rude. She tried to compensate for her colleagues' lack of, I guess, professionalism at that point. So I would love to mention like the difference between the first two attendants and the lady who actually ended up serving me. But let's just say the lady who ended up being friendly to me didn't look like she was local. Like she was originally from that part of Switzerland. Is that racism? Is that them being like, I don't understand why. Yeah.
Very hard to say. It may be something about you that irritated her. It could just be that she's having a hard time in her life and you attribute it to yourself, when in reality it has nothing to do with you.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
It's in reality, it's natural to think that other people's behavior are caused by us because we are the center of our world and our universe, right? But very often other people's reactions are actually caused by something else that has nothing to do with us.
And I think also this is what happens really when you're unfamiliar with something. Like if that had happened to me, let's say here in Asia, in Singapore or in the Philippines, would I feel offended? Probably not. I would be more generous. I'd probably be more generous, like exactly what you said. I'd be like, you know what? She's having a bad day. This is her job. I shouldn't give them a hard time. This is not an easy job. It's mostly thankless. I would be more generous if this were Asia, because maybe I connect more, maybe because I'm more familiar. But then I go over there and I'm bringing with me all of these preconceived minor aggressions that I assume people are prejudiced against me simply because I'm different and all these things. So maybe like straight away I'm jumping into it's me, you know?
But it's also highlighted that consciously or not, we are constantly judging how we fit into the environment that we are in.
Absolutely.
Like, you are hypersensitive because you have this heightened sense of vigilance in an environment that not only is new and different, but you do not fit the environment. You are shorter, Asian. And this naturally creates a sense of vulnerability because we stand out, right?
Yes.
We are different from the crowd. There's no place to hide.
Yeah.
Our protective instinct is kicking in.
Absolutely, because I was alone as well, right?
Yeah.
I wonder if I was traveling with someone, it might be easier, you know, because you have a confidant. Maybe we'll just make fun of them. But this one is like, you're alone, right? That adds to the vulnerability as well.
Yeah.
So for sure, lots of cultural experiences. That we went to the Christmas night market because this was towards the end of November. Night markets are huge in Europe during the holiday season. We talked about food being a doorway to culture. So definitely got introduced to a lot of culture.
Okay, you want to share more about that?
Glühwein, which is the hot...
Oh, the hot wine.
Yeah, cinnamon, red wine, and I don't know what else. And then in the night market, you can buy them and then you can keep the cup that they come in.
Oh.
So you walk around drinking the hot wine, which is perfect when it's cold. Cheese fondue. And then it was so funny because when we were eating cheese fondue, I was told, oh, you know, we need to have some schnapps so that we don't absorb too much of the fat. So you have cheese fondue, you have glühwein, and then you have schnapps. Yeah, so my liver had to do a lot of work, but it was fantastic.
And I remember you told me that you saw snow.
Yeah, it started snowing when I was leaving Switzerland and also on the day I left Germany. So I spent my last weekend in Munich.
Okay.
And what I did really was just to go to the museums because I'm a nerd when it comes to traveling. And then I was so lucky because I have friends in Stuttgart, but they traveled to Munich to see me. And I even had a friend who traveled from the Netherlands. Oh my God, Taiti, I forget where you live. Somewhere, Belgium, Netherlands, Amsterdam, I can't remember. So that was really fun as well, meeting up with friends. We went to the residence, which is, I guess, the Buckingham Palace of Germany, which is the palace by the Bavarian dynasty that ruled at that time. So very opulent place. It's just ostentatious in its designs. So I managed to squeeze a lot in 10 days.
Yes, it sounds amazing. There. Like you told us about Paris, Germany, Switzerland, obviously.
Amazing experiences all around. Yeah.
Just one last thing. You say it was very cold. You want to tell us about this? Because Ting, you grew up in a tropical island. You spent your whole life in Singapore, which is a tropical island too.
I hated it.
Was it your first experience of winter?
No.
Okay.
No. You know, a long time ago, I went to the U.S., New York of all places, over Christmas.
Okay.
So that was my first experience of proper winter, and I got sick, you know, because you were doing, obviously, walking to the Empire State, walking here, walking there, and then by the fifth day, I had a fever. Yeah. So, but this was like 20 years ago or something. And then, obviously, when I lived in Beijing had some brutal winters. Yes. I think the coldest I experienced when I lived there was minus 18. It's not my favorite season for sure. And then once you see snow, you're like over it, you know. Snow is pretty, but then after the first day, you're like, ugh. So in Switzerland, it was the tail end of autumn, the start of winter. So it was starting to get cold. It was 6-7 degrees.
Okay.
Like you rightly pointed out, I'm a tropical island girl from the Philippines, so definitely I don't do very well in the winter. And you're gonna edit this out, but yes, I had trouble breathing. The cold was just making my nose super dry.
Okay. You don't want me to share that?
Oh no, we can. You can. Okay. No, this is because of my toilet experience earlier. You wanted to cut it out, so is it in the same realm of sensitivity of delicateness? I don't know, but yes, I had a hard time breathing because my nose got super dry. If I go back, I'd love to go back in the fall or in the spring, but yes, I'd like to avoid winter as much as I can. And also, you know, there was one night my host invited me to their house for dinner. And again, I took the public transport. So in Switzerland, the public transport is, there's no like tapping in, tapping out.
Uh-huh.
There are no tickets. You just go in. If an inspector catches you and asks for your card and you can't prove that you've paid your taxes or something like that, then you get into trouble. But in general, it's like you just hop on, hop off, both bus and tram. So I took the tram out to the suburbs, outside of the city one night. I had to take the tram and then a bus. And I remember I was looking at the bus route and where my friend lived. And I looked at it on the map and it was like 5-minute bus ride. And in Singapore, 5-minute bus ride, you can walk. So I was thinking, hey, worst case, it's probably going to be 15 minutes walk. But then I caught the bus. And when I saw where the bus passed through, I'm like, yeah, I can't walk because it went through the forest.
Oh, yeah.
At night, no lights.
Yeah.
I guess it was further, maybe because the bus was also moving faster. Mm-hmm. And I would have imagined like, oh, 5 minutes bus ride, I can walk that. But no, when I saw it, I'm like, no.
Yeah,
no,
it wasn't city driving or city level speed, right?
No,
yeah.
It's not. Again, maybe that's another cultural realization, like the way we translate like physical distance and commuting. Like,
because you make your judgment based on how you have made them before, right?
Correct.
So when you live in a big city, the bus goes very slowly.
Yeah. So. And then, you know, I have images of Blair Witch movie in my head, you know, which I'm very, very imaginative when it comes to these things. And
I do like, that too.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. Oh boy. Yeah. So that was Europe.
So we recorded the first season of The Cultural Quotient before you went on that trip. I'm curious, as you were there, is there anything that popped up from what we had discussed earlier that gave you a different perspective on the experience you were having in Switzerland?
Like I mentioned, I definitely had more awareness
of
cultural differences.
Okay.
And really the number one thing that I had to process whenever something popped out at me is that... is this culture or is this just my insecurity? I was constantly asking myself. And what you said, right? I want to belong. I want to fit in. I want to behave correctly. I don't want to offend anyone. Yeah. So I want to step up and behave the way people do in this place. But then in order to do that, I realized I had to hurdle some personal insecurities of mine or maybe some preconceived judgments on my part, like the greeting, having to overcome that shyness, just forcing myself to be a bit braver when it comes to interacting with people. And I'm so glad you pointed out the contradiction in, oh yes, I have no problem talking to strangers, like cab drivers and airline seatmates. But then when I go into a shop or, you know, the hotel concierge, whatever, then suddenly I again feel small, or I don't have an explanation for it right now. I'm not sure why.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And you say that your earlier conversation gave you this awareness of this tension between, is this a culture, is it my insecurity? Before we had those conversations on cultural intelligence, or if we didn't have those conversations on cultural intelligence, how different would this have been?
Oh, it'll be very different. It'll all just be viewed from the lens of my insecurity. Like, okay, it'll just be all about me. But because of this journey that we've been on so far, suddenly I'm more aware of, like what I mentioned, you know, individualistic versus collectivist culture. Oh, this is the West. People here are just a lot more direct, a lot more individualistic. They expect you to do things for yourself. Yeah. Like, even in the office, you know, here in Singapore or in other parts, or even in India when I went, which would be our next episode, you can leave your coffee cup, right? You can leave and somebody will wash that for you. In Europe, no, there's no help. You have to do everything yourself. And I was really shocked that people will give you a look if you leave your cup and you didn't wash it. You know, there are signs there. You put it in the dishwasher properly. So little things like this, obviously, tell me, oh yeah, this is why this culture is like this. And then the power distance, definitely in Western culture, it's lower.
Okay.
In the corporate setting, everybody treats like it's more egalitarian, definitely. Mm-hmm. When you go to the cafe, even the attendants there, they get irritated if you take so long to choose and all that. And it's just different. But now I'm able to evaluate it definitely from the cultural dimensions, and seeing it played out in real life is a very interesting exercise.
And you are better able at seeing the cultural influence and not just attributing whatever is happening to either you being at fault or other people being bad.
Yeah. I'm a naturally curious person. I always question why, where does that come from? And I don't know if we mentioned this in the last season, right? Like, possibly what feeds into Asian insecurity is we were colonized. Maybe until now, there's something in our psyche that contributes to why we feel superior or inferior because of this whole hundreds of years of history.
Okay. Well, amazing. So many stories and adventures. I'm so glad that you came back to share those stories.
I know. And thank you for asking about them. Like I said, today I had to go through my phone to look at the pictures and remember all the good memories, all of the interesting experiences. So thanks for giving me the opportunity to review that. It was a great way to close out the year, for sure. You travel to Europe. Thank you, Catherine, for giving me the chance to share about it.
Yes. The idea is really to put cultural intelligence in context and seeing how those skills will actually play out in our real life experiences.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm happy to hear the comments. Please share your own experiences. When you travel, let's reverse it. What were your experiences when you came to the Philippines, when you came to Asia, and you came to Singapore? I'm happy to hear about this as well. Like, what were the similarities or differences we had, you know?
Yeah. Great. We are off to a good start of season 2. Any more stories to come to put cultural intelligence in context?
Yeah.
So we will end this first episode now. And till next time.
Till next time.
Thank you for listening.
Remember to give us 5 stars or leave a comment, question, or feedback on LinkedIn.
Till next time.